Stephen, one thing to consider when we come back from the break, I love your theory. It is fascinating about the different races on this planet coming from different regions of the universe. But what about, you know, dogs, for example, and birds and cats? They're all similar, but they're different. Does that mean they all came too? Think about that. Back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Stephen, the question, of course, is we have dogs and cats. They're all alike, like humans, but they're all different. Did they come from other planets, other systems? Hello, Stephen. Ooh, where is he? Well, Tommy, you'll have to get him back in, and we'll get you back up. You got that, Dan? Okay, Steve, are you there? Nope. He is not there. We will need to reconnect as soon as we can. And we'll call him right back and get you in the system. Well, we're talking to Steve Mailer, and this is where I do the best I can with no guest and no phones. So hear me out for a moment, because what we're talking about is his book, From Light into Darkness. It's called The Evolution of Religion into Ancient Egypt. Now, some of his theories are pretty fascinating indeed. When he talks about the Egyptians being at least 65,000 years old, that's a long, long time, quite frankly. And, you know, different people who have studied the subjects of Egyptology have come up with their own conclusions, their own theories. And in this particular case, this is one of the most unusual ones, yet it's the one that could explain, I think, a lot of reasons why this planet is the way it is. Something happened a long, long time ago, and quite frankly, the research into Egyptology, why the pyramids were built the way they were, using sound, using some kind of consciousness, is a theory that was used by Edward Leitch Scullin, for example, when he developed the Coral Castle as well. And, I got to tell you, if we don't for some reason get Stephen Mailer back on, we will have to go to open lines because we'll keep the show going. No need to go to any tapes or any programs like that. But I have no idea where he's gone or what has happened to him, because he has just simply disappeared totally. So he is out in the system and he is gone. So let me see if we can go to some other calls right now. And nope, nothing seems to be working right now, folks. So just bear with me for a little bit. Let me tell you about his website. I'll tell you about mine. It's GizaPyramid.com, GizaPyramid.com, and our email is george@coasttocoastam.com as well, and that is the way it is for now. So we'll try to get one more connection with Stephen Mailer. If we do not get it, we'll go into open lines, and we'll do the rest of the show, just you and me, quite frankly. Other than that, first hour, talked about that very unusual plane crash in near Greece, and we'll do some follow-ups to that as well, too. Stephen, are you there?
Yes, George, I'm back.
What happened to you?
Well, I hate to say that we're having another Jordan Maxwell experience, but that's what it seems like.
Your phone just went?
Yeah, you just clicked out. You went dead, yep.
Well...
You know, and I'm a very good friend of Jordan Maxwell, and I talked to him about that incident, so I hope nobody's playing with us.
That was very strange indeed.
Yeah. Anyways, and we haven't even gotten into secret societies yet.
I danced and bumbled my way through 6 minutes without
you. You did great. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not an expert in Egyptology like you are.
well, let's get... I did hear your question, so immediately when the phone went dead, I turned on the radio.
Okay.
You make a good point. Where do dogs, where do cats, where do birds? I believe that everything is an essence, and that all the essences may have come. I mean, again, I think this planet is a great playground. It's a great experiment for who and for whom, the gods, God, whatever people want to say. And so, yes, dogs may have come from another star system, cats. You know, it's very interesting. I once remember reading an entomologist saying that biologists can't explain bees. Now, bees seem to be similar to other insects in this planet, but he was say this person was making a viable theory that there's no way to explain that bees have evolved in this planet, that they may have come from somewhere else. So that is my answer to that. I think all the essences which we call species today may have come from all different places and have come to this planet for this great experiment.
Well, you know, I like your theory. I mean, because it's one of the few that makes some sense into why everybody is similar but different.
Yes. Yes. And again, this whole idea that one species evolved into another. Well, yes. I mean, biology says our DNA is similar to chimpanzees, only different by a little bit. Our body structure, skeletal structure is the same. But I don't believe any species has ever evolved into another. I think we are all different essences.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit, if we can, about the Rosicrucian Society first and foremost, because that is an evolution into what we've been talking about right now.
Yes, and there was a specific reason why I had to go into detail in this current book about them. And again, we say Rosicrucian Order. Now, not to, you know, to be pedantic about it, but there are many different groups who've called themselves Rosicrucian. There has been a Rosicrucian Society, Rosicrucian Fellowship. The organization that I connected with in San Jose, California, is known as the Rosicrucian Order Amarc, and they're the only organization in the world that can call itself the Rosicrucian Order. Now, what led me to them was my interest in Egyptology, because 1972, I got out of the Air Force after 4 years during the Vietnam conflict. I am a Vietnam veteran. And came to San Jose, California to do graduate work at San Jose State University. Now, living in San Jose, I discovered that there are two major tourist attractions in that town. One is known as the Winchester Mystery House, which was created by the widow of the man who developed the Winchester rifle.
Okay.
A strange place. But in the 16 years of living in San Jose, I never went there. The other was known as Rosicrucian Park. It was this complex of four square blocks that had a planetarium, a museum, offices, and a theater. And I found, going around there, that there was all Egyptian architecture in this place. Now, I said, now, wait a minute. Anything I had ever read or learned about the Rosicrucians, and it was very little at that time, this is the 70s, was that it was an organization that began in the 17th century in Europe. There was never any mention of Egypt being involved. So I said, now, wait a minute, what's going on? Well, the one thing led to another. A friend of mine got employed at Rosicrucian Park. We were involved in doing professional theater together. And we convinced the officers of the Rosicrucian Order to allow us to put on a play at Rosicrucian Park in 1977. It was Arthur Miller's The Crucible. In the course of that, I got to meet many people who came out to try out for our play who were Rosicrucians. And I was fascinated with these people coming from all different races, all different religions, all different socioeconomic, ethnic backgrounds, all for this common ideal of studying mysticism and metaphysics. So I began to investigate and get seriously interested in the Rosicrucian Order, went to work there, joined the order. Now, in the course of that, I became a staff research scientist, which enabled me to have access to the archives and the library. And that's how I was able to write this chapter
in my
book.
And does it go way, way back, those archives?
Yes. I saw documents that go back to Middle Ages and before, but I saw artifacts that go back to ancient Egypt. And there was the connection. So I found out that this Rosicrucian Order began, as I said, in 1909, by naming Harvey Spencer Lewis. And if people go to the photographs that Lex has kindly put up, and they just skip to the last one, the fifth one, there is a beautiful painting that I took a photograph. It's in my book of Harvey Spencer Lewis, so they can see what he looked like.
Did they not go, the Rosicrucians, did they not go to Egypt in the 1920s as well?
Yes. Thank you, George. Yeah. There's actually a photograph in my book. Harvey Spencer Lewis led the first modern expedition of Rosicrucians to Egypt in 1929, and I have a photograph in my current book that documents that. But Harvey Spencer Lewis himself, born to a Protestant family, became very interested, had natural psychic gifts. And, you know, to make a long story short, I get his history in my book. He had a psychic reading around the turn of the 20th century where a woman told him he was connected to the Rosicrucians in Egypt. Now, he'd never heard that either. And all in his investigations, he'd never heard of any Rosicrucian order in Egypt. Well, to make a long story short, he began to investigate, contacted some Masons in France. They told him to come to France. They investigated him. They quizzed him, and they decided that he was legitimate. He was seriously a serious seeker. He was sent to the south of France, where he was initiated into the Rosicrucian order, and he was given the jurisdiction to begin the order again in North and South America, which he did in 1914. And his investigations said that the Rosicrucian order went back to ancient Egypt, specifically to the 18th dynasty of the New Kingdom, which is about 1400 BC, 3,400 years ago. And that's the history that I document in my book.
Let's spend some time here, Stephen, talking about the great cataclysm of 9500 BC that you mentioned and its implications. And does that have anything to do with the flood, the Noah flood?
Yes, I believe that's where it came from. I believe, again, I'm talking about a worldwide deluge, talking about tsunamis 1,000 feet high. The flood, and again, I would refer people, if they want more documentation, to the book Cataclysm 9500 BC, because they meticulously document that at least 250 different myths from people around the world all talk about a flood. It's something that, you know, there are many scientists, archaeologists, geologists who are trying to say that it was a local event in the Middle East, and that's the source of the Bible story. I think it was a myth that occurred over and over from people all around the world because it was cataclysmic, it was worldwide.
Well, was someone like a Noah tipped off that something was going to happen?
Possibly so. I mean, people definitely survived. We're still here today.
All right, so let's assume this for a moment. Let's assume that there was an asteroid coming our way. They knew it. I mean, we're predicting one out there around 2036, for example.
Right.
Okay? So let's assume that extraterrestrials might have been on the planet, may have been doing some genetic altering, who knows what.
Right.
But they knew that an asteroid was coming this way. They probably couldn't stop it, but at least they knew it was going to hit. And they gave a few people, like a Noah, warning that you've got a couple years to prepare for this. Is that possible? Some kind of scenario like that?
Zachariah Sitchin also records that as far as Sumerian myths go. I think that is what happened. I think, again, whether they were warned by the gods, if you will, or by their own wisdom, they did know it was going to happen. Preparations were made. Ships were sent out. People migrated, escaped. But the mere fact of the matter is probably better than 99% of all civilizations were on the planet at that time were wiped out, and maybe a great percentage of humanity went down in the deluge. And those that survived, Barbara Hand Clow talks about it in her book, Catastrophobia, they kept this scar with them of this great cataclysm that became the source of all the great creation mythologies of all the people that survived, passed the stories on. That became the beginning of the oral tradition. And humanity changed after that.
How would we record a disaster like that today?
It's in the creation myth.
And then 10,000 years from now, I wonder what people would be saying.
Right.
You know, we would say our cities are all wiped out from this huge whatever it might have been.
Exactly. And that would be passed down in the stories of the people who survived. And they would turn it into a great mythology. Like, again, it becomes the wrath of the gods.
Is that the reason why the technology was lost?
Yes.
Because so many people were gone with it?
Yes. But again, not completely lost, because I believe there's evidence that there were continued development, the continued building of temples in Egypt, stone temples, but it began as, again, the cycle shifted and consciousness began to wane after the cataclysm. So, one of the great mysteries that Egyptologists can never explain is this de-evolution, this retrograde. You look, even in so-called dynastic time periods, you look at the Old Kingdom, which is when they think the Great Pyramid was built. But we know structures built in the Old Kingdom. Then we see, and the type of hieroglyphs, the type of jewelry, the type of art that's produced. And then as it goes forward to what's called the Middle Kingdom, it devolves. It's less advanced. To the New Kingdom, where they're not, we know for a fact in the New Kingdom, they didn't build in granite or limestone anymore, but in sandstone, a much softer stone, easy to work with. So one of the mysteries in the Egyptology is, as you look at the so-called dynastic history, it degenerates as we go forward against this idea of linear evolution. And that's because the technology was lost. And we've just rediscovered things. It's amazing. One of the things in the 1880s, we discovered Portland cement. And then we have the cement that we use today. And it's known that the Romans had inherited the great idea of building and technology, and they had cement. So we, from you're talking about from the time of Rome to the 1880s, we didn't have this ability to use cement. So we were just rediscovering today what we already knew. But yes, to answer your question, the technology definitely decreased, and we almost go what we talk about the Neolithic period around 8,000 BC, where we just went back to a Stone Age.
Now,
we were very crude in our development.
Now, that the offshoots then of this faith-based belief that they that started in Egypt, how did that then begin to trickle out and go all around the planet?
Well, I believe the first great modern religion began in dynastic Egypt 5,000 years ago. So now you have these myths, these stories, and you have then a group of people who used certain techniques to keep their consciousness high. These are what we call the early shamans. These are the people who discovered psychoactive plants and used drugs not just to get high as people do today, but to keep themselves in a high state of awareness, to be aware of things with people who didn't were suddenly starting to lose that consciousness. So they developed techniques, they developed rituals, they developed mythologies, they created religion.
The incredible technologies that they had, how do you think they got it?
I think it was just a matter of consciousness. A matter, again, this is why we're not going to find the blueprints. It's just a matter of being in this high state of consciousness.
You don't think it was handed down to them by some other...
Yes. Again, the stories, a lot of the techniques were still handed down, as you mentioned before, from master to disciple. But they were kept in small groups where it wasn't then everybody. At one time, we believe all people had access to this degree of consciousness and could be aware of when they were building the Great Pyramid, everybody was in the consciousness understanding how it was being done, what was done. This devolved to only small groups of people. And again, George, to lead into I know where you want to go, this is how secret societies evolved.
Yeah, absolutely, because these societies, which we'll talk about when we come back from this break shortly, we have a few moments here, but these societies came from this, and then at what point did they decide they wanted to run the planet?
Oh, boy. Let's do that after break, because that's a good story. That's exactly why I wrote the chapter on the Rosicrucians that I did, why I want to talk to you tonight about the Illuminati, the One World Order, all of that.
Is it all connected?
Yes, all connected.
Well, that's what I thought. And what is Hakim doing these days?
Hakim is basically retired.
How old is he?
He's 75.
All right.
But, you know, I always use the quote of Indiana Jones, it's not the years, it's the mileage. The man has been for over 60 years going in, up and down tombs, climbing and out of pyramids, so he needs a rest now.
I always use a quote from one of the Indiana Jones movies with my son, because whenever we email each other back and forth, he ends it by saying, "A penitent man shall pass." Remember that part of the movie?
I love it. Yes, yep. I love that. I love it. A penitent man shall pass.
You had to kneel in order for that blade that came.
Yep. A
right
penitent
up.
Man is humble before God.
That's right. Right. Absolutely. These theories that you subscribe to, you're beginning to get more and more support for.
Yes. That's what's great. Again, it's just wonderful that you guys do what you do. If people go to the Great Pyramid of Giza website, they will see an international board of scientists who, including some of the most outstanding theoretical physicists in the world, and people like J.J. Hertek, like Joe Parr, I mean, many people I could name. We're getting more and more support all the time for these ideas.
Okay, well, you stay with us, Stephen Mailer. Let's make sure you don't get attacked and clicked off again. We'll come back and talk about the Illuminati, the One World Order, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Stephen Mailer. Stephen, are you saying that the Illuminati, this push for a one-world order and government, all started during these days thousands and thousands of years ago? Whoop, he's not there. Now, this has got to be the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. So we'll do that again, and we'll get him right back on again, I hope. The Gremlins are out today. They're out to get us. You know, some time ago when we had the guest Jordan Maxwell on, expert Jordan Maxwell, not only did his phone go out toward the end of the interview, but he received all kinds of bizarre death threats and everything else. Now, Stephen, you're back?
Yes, we had it happened again, George. They don't want us to talk about
it. Now, let me ask you something. When you're on, do you hang up the phone?
No. No. What's happened is the radio gets really loud, and then the phone just cuts off. I am not hanging up.
Okay, so it just clicks.
Yes, and it just goes dead.
Do you hear me at all?
I hear, when we went into break, I heard the commercials, and it got loud and then ended, and then the phone was dead. I have not hung up the phone.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, well... we'll talk about it, though. They can't stop us. So
we'll get our engineering department on this ASAP.
Okay.
To see if there's some kind of a glitch here. I mean, it's unusual for it to be two times in a row.
I know.
Okay. Anyways, the question, of course, is the Illuminati, the one world government, all that. Do you think this started thousands and thousands of years ago?
The trend towards. Now, what I want to make clear, and this is one of the things why I'm wondering. This never happens when Alex Jones is on, but he's one of my favorites when he comes on to talk to you. Now, and Jordan Maxwell. There are many people who talk about these things, and it always seems to come that the explanation is that this has always been this way, that these organizations have always been out the total control to keep us in darkness. And the key thing I try to bring out is it didn't begin that way. Now, even look at the word Illuminati. Illumin, it means light. So the idea is that in dynastic Egypt, when religion first evolved, then religion became a system to control and to keep people in a certain mindset. So certain groups formed part of the oral tradition to try to keep the ancient wisdom alive. It's the terms that come out in the metaphysical literature are like the Great White Brotherhood or the White Lodge. Now, those terms, particularly White Brotherhood, is not politically correct anymore because it sounds racist and sexist. But, you know, it wasn't. White didn't mean race. It meant light. Brotherhood meant men and women. But they began, the first secret societies were reactions against the excesses of religion that was trying to control people. And their idea was to try to keep ancient wisdom alive. So this is where the original word Illuminati comes from.
Then what happened to them? Why did they change?
Because we're in this cycle of darkness. So in this cycle, everything, every system, every belief system that has come about has become co-opted and corrupted. And again, I talk about religion in that respect in my book. But these secret societies, Illuminati, Rosicrucians, Masons, everybody tries to lump them together in the New World Order. What has happened, particularly in the last couple hundred years, is these societies have become infiltrated. Now, I don't know for sure. I mentioned in my book the modern term Illuminati began in 1775. A gentleman named Adam Wieshaupt, who was a Jesuit, formed what's known as the Bavarian Illuminati. I have not done enough research myself to be able to say whether he began that organization to control people to start this new world order. But what has happened, definitely what has occurred, is the organizations have become infiltrated by groups that do want to keep people in darkness and want to control the world. There's a great example of that in the 1920s, in the Masons of Italy, what's known as the P2 Lodge, Propaganda Due in Italian, became infiltrated by the fascists of Mussolini and tried to control the Masons. I know for a fact, I don't go into this in my book, but it's something we can discuss, that the Rosicrucian Order that I was involved with in 1987, 1988 was attempted to be co-opted by the Moonies, which are connected to the CIA.
Yeah. I'm beginning to think the Illuminati owns the phone company.
Well, they're trying to. So the point, George, today is that these organizations that are trying to control this new world order are definitely people who go back to this whole concept of the age we're in to try to keep us in darkness. But my point is the original intent of the so-called secret societies, particularly the Rosicrucians and the Masons and the Knights Templar, was to try to bring light, to try to keep people out of darkness, to try to keep the ancient wisdom alive. But a lot of these groups, and this is why I tell people they have to be discerning. There are many groups who call themselves the Knights Templar. There are many groups who call themselves Rosicrucian and Mason, and they're not the original intent to bring light, but to control and bring darkness. And so that's why we come up with the idea today of the New World Order, the Illuminati, that's out to control.
But they changed, and they've changed in a bad way, Stephen.
Well, that's the cycle, George, and this is the point where I said we were going to leave with a positive note. They're not going to win, because the light is coming, the dawn is coming, they can't stop it. It certainly looks bad, and that's why I say that the whole idea of terrorism, the war on terrorism, the whole wars around the world, the whole distrust, the whole idea of trying to keep people, you've got Christians distrusting Jews, Jews and Christians distrusting Muslims, Muslims hating Christians and Jews. This whole idea is to try to keep people separated and in darkness, but they will not win. No matter how many times they cut me off speaking tonight to you on the phone, they will not win. And how many of us that they've eliminated and moved out of the physical body, they still will not win.
Well, I've got to tell you, how bizarre is, I've had two guests where they've had severe phone problems.
Jordan Maxwell.
Jordan was one, and you,
yes.
Both of you, talking about the same thing.
Interesting,
now,
isn't it?
I'm a guy who doesn't believe in coincidences, as you well know, Steve, listening to this
George.
Program.
So, I had a long discussions with Jordan about that after your show, because I was listening that night. I'm a big Jordan Maxwell fan.
What can one deduce from this very strange irony?
They don't want us to know the truth about the fact that these things are not inevitable. In other words, that we don't have to stay separated, that we don't, how we're going to win the war on terrorism is stop believing these leaders.
But they have this kind of technological control where zap a button wipe you off?
Absolutely. They can make it appear that somebody died of a heart attack, that it wasn't a heart attack. There's a lot of people, you know, we're getting into conspiracy. A lot of people don't like to go that. But I know people who think that our great friend John Mack, who was supposedly hit by a car mm-hmm. on a London street, was taken out. You've talked about all these microbiologists.
Yes.
Jean Maloff. You know, we've talked about these things. They try to take us out, but they can't win. I mean, they have all sorts of sophisticated. They're in control of the technology. They're in control of the media. They're in control of these things. But they're not in control of you, George, because you're here every night speaking for the light and speaking for the truth. They can't stop us.
You've got that right. Every night, indeed, and we'll continue to pound away at
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. If they take us out, there'll be somebody to take our place.
Of everything you've done, the research that you've done into this specific book, then, From Light into Darkness, anything there bother you or scare you in the work you did?
No, because I've come to the point at the end of my book where I say there is nothing to fear. If there is no death, there is no physical death, how we've been controlled is by fear. That's how they control people, by keeping you afraid of death, afraid of someone invading your house, of somebody carrying a bomb into your bus, into your plane, into this, into that. It's fear. If we don't fear, then there's nothing that they can do to us. And I don't fear. I'm not afraid of anything.
Well, and if you don't fear, then you concentrate on more legitimate things.
Right, and I concentrate on the fact that this is just a cycle, and this cycle will end, and there's hope for humanity. Humanity will survive this.
Do you believe in life after death?
Yeah, in a way. You know, reincarnation is a difficult thing for me to discuss now because I don't believe in an individual soul. But yet I do believe we have access to the vibration of everyone who's ever lived before, and that the vibration, the basic essence that we go on, has never been created, never be destroyed. So yes, it's a difficult, complicated answer to the question, but I believe that we do go on, our essence comes back, there's continual cycles.
But you do not believe in individual souls?
No.
Why not?
Well, that's part of Hakim's teachings that I leave at the end of my book, because we don't believe in separation. So to believe in an individual soul is actually to believe that we're separate beings. I think we are one soul. We're just reflections of the one soul. Now, people can call that one soul God. I call it spirit. But I believe we're all just reflections, so there is no separation, so we're not individuals. This is one of the great paradoxes of Buddhism, because Buddhism talks about reincarnation, yet they don't believe in an I. They don't believe in an ego, in an individual. So I prefer to use the word spirit. I believe in spirit. Spirit's never been created. It will never be destroyed. Spirit continues. The essence that we are goes on. But I don't believe the ego, the personality, continues past the physical.
So if all this is true, then you don't believe in the angels or any of that?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh,
see,
you
here's
do.
The paradox.
There is a paradox.
There's all these different essences. There's all these different vibrations. Some people call them angels. Some people call it, you know, whatever you want to call it, the past masters. I believe the essence of everyone who has ever lived is there that we can access. And that's what people do when they do readings, when they do past life readings, they call it, or psychic readings. They're connecting to the essence that's there. In India, it's called the Akashic Record. So it is a paradox, George. Again, it sounds like something is not true and true at the same time. I believe there is a continuum, and this continuum, I don't believe in a Big Bang. Hakim's teachings, the indigenous wisdom.
Well, I don't believe in a Big Bang either.
I don't think there ever was a beginning, and therefore there'll never be an end. So it's just continual cycles.
I find it difficult to believe that a little piece of matter, so minute, so small, one could not even see it with the naked eye or with any kind of a microscope, would explode and compress and then create all this energy and mass that we see out there right now.
Well, here's the great paradox of quantum physics right now. How does something, the created universe, which we call matter, come out of nothing?
I can't understand that. I went crazy trying to figure that out, Stephen, when I was a kid.
I know.
I was told, don't do it. You know, I really was. My mother and my father, who were pretty spiritual, told me, don't try to answer that question, George. And
right.
I said, well, why not?
Right.
Mom, why not, Dad?
Right.
And their answer was, because you'll go crazy trying to figure it out.
Interesting. When I come from an Orthodox Jewish background. My father was once trained to be a rabbi. I once questioned him about the Kabbalah. He said that the Orthodox rabbis told him that anybody that studies the Kabbalah will either go crazy or commit suicide.
Well, I'm not laughing to laugh. I mean, that's almost believable, you know?
It is a paradox, George, and that's why, you know, you can't deal with this logically. You have to try to come from both sides of the brain, trust your experience as much as you can trust the intellect on this, because it cannot be understood. This is why people always say you can never explain God intellectually.
See, the way out is a lot of people who are true believers, and there's nothing wrong with that,
right,
but they will believe that it's faith, and that's the answer.
Right.
And for me, that's not good enough.
No.
I want to know how something came from nothing.
Exactly. I will give you the quote, a famous quote that I love to use, of Carl Jung. He was once interviewed by the BBC in 1965, and the gentleman asked him, well, did you believe in God when you were a boy? And he laughed and said, of course, everybody, you know, is taught to believe in God when you're a boy. And he says, well, do you believe in God now? And Jung paused, had the twinkle in his eye, and he said, no, I don't believe, I know. That's the mystic's answer. You have to trust your experience. So that sounds like faith, but it is not blind faith. It is something that you have personally experienced. The only way anybody can explain God, soul, is by having a personal experience that led you to that understanding. It can't come out of a book, and it can't be just blind faith.
I can't wait to hear you at the top of the hour when we take phone calls.
Boy, it's interesting.
Because if you're not there again, I'm then there's something going on here.
Well, if I'm not here again, you won't be able to take phone calls, because it's your system that's not me.
And then we're going to call you back again. This is what I want you to do, though, this time. No matter what you hear,
right,
at least for a while, don't hang up.
I got you.
Don't hang up. And then if obviously you hear me in distress going, Stephen, because do you have a way to hear the radio show
in the background? When you cut off, I turn on the radio, and there's no problem.
Okay.
But what happens, George, is usually what happens when a phone goes dead, you then have that ring, and an operator comes on and say, if you want to make a call, please hang up.
Right. Right. That is strange. There are some gremlins out there somewhere.
Well, sure. They don't want us to talk about these things.
Okay. And then when you hear me trying to introduce you and you're not there,
yes,
then hang up so we can get you.
Gotcha.
Just in case.
Just in case.
This is as weird as it comes. I'm wondering what would happen if I'm going to be in the cave in St. Louis in a few weeks. Where?
Well, that's why I made the joke. How come this never happens when Alex Jones is on? That's what it should happen.
Well, hey, don't remind them. They'll come after him next, too.
Oh, I love Alex Jones.
But they do. They own the phone company. They
yes,
got to.
Of course.
And everything. So there's somebody there monitoring this show right now.
Right.
He's got your line, already knows where it is.
Right.
And they just hits the button every time during the top of the hour or during the break.
Right.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
And he can't control our ability to call you back, though.
It looks that way. I'm
but
glad
they're
of
working.
That.
They're working on that one. They may have that
let's
result.
Not give him any ideas.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, let's get back into the matters at hand. So they had this technology. They used it to build the pyramids. They used it to move the tonnage of brick and stone. And then it was gone. Gone because of the Great Flood? Is that what wiped out the knowledge?
This cataclysm.
Okay.
The cataclysm that caused, and we can return to that. You know, I know you want to go to phone calls. We never did get to the photographs, but the first photograph that Lex was kind enough to put up is what Chris and I call the smoking gun. It's the upper wall of the Grand Gallery in the Great Pyramid that shows... And Chris Dunn discovered in 1999 that the upper wall of the Grand Gallery is granite, not limestone, as been previously believed, and it's greatly blackened. It shows charring. So this is the smoking gun to us. This is what we think is remnant of this cataclysm. Something happened in the Great Pyramid, a fire, conflagration, great heat. The whole pyramid shook violently, and the grid line stopped. It just ended.
Now, for something like that to happen, it had to have been huge.
Huge. That's what we think is either a meteorite strike, a comet, a planetary flyby, you know, something which really disturbed the Earth and shook the whole Earth.
Maybe an explosion in the atmosphere?
Could be.
What about something nuclear?
Well, that's possible. There are people who have that theory. Hakim doesn't support that. Again, according to the indigenous tradition, it was a natural event, but which could mean a cataclysm, but a natural celestial event, not something that was caused by a war or by a bomb.
Interesting. Website, GizaPyramid.com. What do they find when they go to that?
They will find the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association. They can scroll down and see my name. They can even see my book there. I'm one of the research directors, and they can see an international advisory board of incredible scientists.
This book here, From Light into Darkness, where do you get it?
You can get it from Adventures Unlimited Press, Amazon, anywhere, or they can order it directly from me if you want a personal signed copy.
This is hot off the presses now, isn't
it? Hot off the press. This came out a week and a half ago.
Now, can they also email you through your website?
Yes.
All right. Simple enough. They can email me, too, at george@coasttocoastam.com. All right, Stephen, when we come back, let's see if they nip you again.
Okay.
And this is getting fascinating.
Quite frankly,
this is almost as interesting as you being on the show. I want to see what they're going to do to you.
I know.
We will open up the phone lines, give everybody an opportunity to chat with you. We'll keep you around for another hour.
Great.
With our very special guest, Stephen Mailer. And again, like he mentioned, his website, Giza, G-I-Z-A, pyramid.com. Just rush that together as one word, GizaPyramid.com. And I shall be back in a moment. Hopefully, Stephen will be too. So stand by for this one. Anything will happen on this night. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.